Good morning. Please turn in your Bibles to Proverbs chapter 6. That's page 514 in those brown Bibles that you can pick up as you walk in. They're on little tables there by the door if you want to follow along in a Bible, or just dial it up on your smartphone. Unlike previous weeks, we're not going to be skipping around Proverbs so much. We're going to locate ourselves in the first few chapters of Proverbs, chapter 6, a little bit of chapter 5, chapter 7. So please turn to Proverbs chapter 6. We are nearing the end of our series out of the book of Proverbs. We've got today and then one more week, and then we will move on to something else. But we're going to bring this one to what I hope is a strong close over the next couple of weeks. And these two messages today and the one next week, they are related and connected. I can't say everything I want to say today, so I'm going to say more next week as well. According to the first few chapters of Proverbs, the purpose of Proverbs is to be a kind of instruction manual for young men. We talked about this when we started the series 6 weeks ago, that you have in the first 9 chapters of Proverbs, you have a number of different speeches from a father to a son, where the father is sharing wisdom with the son that the father says he received from his father and his father received from his father. So passing on wisdom to the next generation. The father's teaching his son the things that he wants his son to know. And part of what he's trying to teach him is how to be successful, how to successfully navigate life so that he doesn't find himself in trouble. And according to these opening chapters, one of the things the father wants the son to know is that you can get yourself in a lot of trouble in a lot of different ways, including falling into sexual immorality. And one of the things we notice when we read through Proverbs is that in these early chapters especially, the father spends a lot of time talking to his son about women, especially the need for him to make wise decisions about the kind of woman that he chooses to spend time with. Part of this is theological instruction. Remember, the father tells his son, go home with Lady Wisdom, not Dame Folly. Sit at Lady Wisdom's table, feast on her food. Her food will make you wise. Don't sit at the table of Dame Folly. Her seductive food won't just make you sick, it can kill you. So stay away from Dame Folly. Go home with Lady Wisdom. It's theological instruction. But a lot of what the father says is also practical instruction, where he's telling his son, here's what you need to know to steer clear of sexual immorality. And we're going to read some of those passages this morning. And if you've been reading with me through Proverbs, you know some of those passages are quite graphic. Don't worry, too graphic for little ears. Don't worry, we're not going to read all of those passages. I'm going to skip over some of the spicy bits and keep it rated G or PG at least. No worries there. But before we read from Proverbs, say just a couple of things. I think it's helpful to remember that Proverbs was not written primarily to us. It was written for us to learn, to grow from, to be encouraged by. But the target audience for Proverbs was young men living in an ancient tribal warrior culture that is very different from our own. I dare you to take everything in Proverbs literally and do what it says. Actually, don't do that, because if you do, you're going to end up in jail. You can't do it. We can all learn something from Proverbs, but we need to remember Proverbs wasn't written originally to us. We're overhearing someone else's conversation, a father's conversation with his son. And second, I want to, before we read Proverbs, I want to clarify the purpose of today's teaching. Today's teaching is not intended to be a theological reflection or a commentary on the hashtag MeToo movement or the national conversation we're having right now about the shocking and disgusting prevalence of sexual harassment, assault, and abuse in seemingly all areas of our society, including the church. That's an important conversation. We can't afford to ignore it. And as followers of Christ, we certainly can't opt out of it. I just want you to know that today's teaching is not intended to directly address those issues. For a teaching I've done in the past that did directly address those issues, I would refer you back to a sermon in December from the story of David and Bathsheba, where I framed many of those issues being more about the abuse of power than the abuse of sex, and I still believe that's true. That as followers of Christ, we should be leading the way on this. We should be modeling and demonstrating and exemplifying and exercising authority and power in a much different way, because we've learned a much different way of exercising power from Christ, who is a radically different kind of king, who exercises his authority and power in relationships in a much different way. But that's not what today's teaching is about. Today is not about power. Today is about sex. And specifically, it's inspired by what the Father says to his Son about sex in the opening chapters of Proverbs, especially just how easy it is to fall into sexual immorality. This teaching today is meant to be a warning, and for some of us, it's a reminder that one of the most common ways that we as human beings can get in trouble, mess up our lives, destroy relationships, make ourselves and other people miserable, is by failing to account for and manage the powerful force within us that is sexual desire. So the Father in Proverbs doesn't want his Son, who is a simpleton — remember in Proverbs that's not a negative label, a simpleton is naive and experienced, easily led astray — the Father in Proverbs does not want his Son, his simple Son, to be naive or uninformed about the consequences of sexual immorality. Listen to what he says to his Son in chapter 6. Beginning in verse 27, the Father says — this is part of a larger warning that gets a little PG-13. But in verse 27, he says, "Can a man scoop a flame into his lap and not have his clothes catch on fire? Can he walk on hot coals and not blister his feet? So it is with the man who sleeps with another man's wife. He who embraces her will not go unpunished." And then you skip down a little bit further to verse 34. "For jealousy arouses a husband's fury, and he will show no mercy when he takes revenge. He will not accept any compensation. He will refuse a bribe, however great it is." You'll notice that the consequence of adultery the Father chooses to highlight with his Son is that in an ancient, a violent, tribal warrior culture, sleeping with another man's wife can get you killed. That's what he tells his Son. Don't do it. It'll get you killed. Now, that's not necessarily the best, certainly not the only reason to not commit adultery, but it's certainly one of the most dramatic. And it's helpful for a father to be able to get his son's attention. "Listen to me, boy. I got something to tell you, and this is a matter of life and death. I'm not playing around on this one. This one will get you killed." Let's listen to another of the Father's warnings to his sons from Proverbs chapter 7. This is a little longer reading. Pick it up in verse 6. The Father says, "At the window of my house, I looked down through the lattice. I saw among the simple. I noticed the young men, noticed among them a youth who had no sense. He was going down the street near her corner, walking along in the direction of her house at twilight, as the day was fading, as the dark of the night set in. Then out came a woman to meet him, dressed like a prostitute and with crafty intent. She's unruly and defiant. Her feet never stay at home, now in the street, now in the squares. At every corner she lurks. And she took hold of him and kissed him, and with a brazen face she said, "Today I have fulfilled my vows. I have food for my fellowship offering at home. So I came out to meet you. I looked for you and have found you. I have covered my bed with colored linens from Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let's drink deeply of love till morning. Let's enjoy ourselves with love. My husband's not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He took his purse filled with money and will not be home till full moon." And with persuasive words, she led him astray. She seduced him with her smooth talk. And all at once, he followed her like an ox going to the slaughter, like a deer stepping into a noose, till arrows pierce his liver, like a bird darting into a snare, little knowing it will cost him his life. I read that passage a couple of weeks ago in ladies' Bible class, and one of the ladies says, "I didn't know that was in the Bible." And then another woman commented and said, "I don't like the way he describes women in that passage. He makes them sound like predators." And I jumped in and clarified. I said, no, he didn't say all women are predators. What he told his son was that in their city, there is a certain kind of woman who preys on simple young men, and his son needs to watch out. And then another woman in class jumped in and says, "You know, it's interesting to me that the way the father describes what happened to that simple young man could also be flipped and applied to what happens to young women in our society who are preyed upon by some men who abuse their power." Not all men, but some men who would abuse their power. And she's absolutely right. In this specific scenario, and it is a very specific scenario, there is a universal warning for young men and young women. Young men, watch out for cougars. They're out there. But young women, watch out. Beware of wolves. They're out there. And you need to be careful. You need to pay attention. And of course, this isn't just a warning for young adults. We all need to be reminded of what's at stake every day. When we go to work, when we leave for a business trip, when we walk into the gym, when we come home, we turn on our computer or the TV, or we sit down to kill some time staring into the screen of a smart device. We all need to be reminded of what's at stake and just how easy it is. So Proverbs assumes that without some instruction, without some guidance, without some training, without some warning, without even threats of dire consequences, Proverbs assumes that simpletons will make foolish choices. They can't help it. It's just going to happen. Without some help, simpletons are in trouble. Simpletons don't accidentally become wise. And in the same way, most of us don't accidentally avoid the trap of sexual immorality. Not in our culture, not in that culture back then. Some things never change. It takes training, it takes intention, it takes planning and strategy, and it takes support from our friends. The advice the father gives his son in Proverbs for avoiding it, staying away from sexual immorality, for protecting himself, to keep from falling, could be summarized in a simple phrase. Situational prevention. The father teaches his son situational prevention. Let me hear you say, situational prevention. Okay, look, I know you're paying attention to what I'm saying. Let me hear you say, situational prevention. Here's what it means. It's described in Proverbs 22, verse 3. A prudent person foresees danger and takes precautions. But the simpleton goes blindly on and suffers the consequences. That is a fantastic definition of wisdom. You want to know what wisdom looks like in everyday life? Part of what wisdom is being able to look ahead and see the potentially disastrous consequences. To see a dangerous situation that's coming and then take action to avoid that situation. Situational prevention. It's the ability to walk a path and say, you know what? There's danger around the bend. I think I'll take a different path. Situational prevention. Seeing the consequences of our actions before we take action and changing our actions proactively. This is what the Father talks about in Proverbs chapter 5, verse 7 and 8. He says, now then, my sons, listen to me. Do not turn aside from what I say. And then here it is. He says, keep to a path far from her. He's talking about that woman again in the city. Keep to a path far from her. Do not go near the door of her house. Stay off her street. Stay away from her house. Don't even go near. Situational prevention. The first mistake the simpleton makes in Proverbs 7 is not that he accepted her invitation to come into her house. His first mistake was he walked down her street at twilight as it was getting dark when he had no business being there. He failed to practice situational prevention. Listen to this from Proverbs 23. This isn't about sexual immorality, but it applies just as well. Beginning in verse 1, when you sit to dine with a ruler, note well what is before you. And here's why you don't take Proverbs literally. Note well what is before you and put a knife to your throat if you are given to gluttony. Do not crave his delicacies, for that food is deceptive. What this proverb is teaching is if you are a sucker for fancy food, then don't put yourself in a situation where you could be manipulated or led astray or take advantage of by a person of power who would invite you to a dinner party just to suck you in to his web, to her web. No, don't let that food seduce you. Stay away. If you are given to gluttony, there are some tables you should not sit at. Situational prevention. And there are some streets that young men should not walk down. And there are some invitations that young women should not accept. And there are some channels that should not be a part of our cable package. And there are some apps that we should not download onto our phones. Situational prevention. Seeing the danger ahead of time and taking steps to avoid it. Because for most people, they don't fall into sexual immorality all at once. It doesn't happen like that. It's 1,000 small decisions, 1,000 small compromises that culminate in one gigantic, disastrous decision. One writer describes situational prevention as putting guardrails up in different areas of our lives. What's the purpose of a guardrail? Well, you put a guardrail in the road next to a cliff so that if you veer off the road, the guardrail keeps you from falling. What does a guardrail do? It keeps you from falling if you stray from the path. We don't all have to have the same guardrails. That's where we get into trouble, is when a preacher like me tries to prescribe and tell everybody, here's what you need to be doing in your life. No, that doesn't work. It doesn't help. It's what the Pharisees tried to do. Jesus condemned it. We don't all have to have the same guardrails, the same strategies in our lives, but wisdom says we all need to have some. So, what are your guardrails? What are your strategies? What principles or rules even do you follow to keep you from getting too close to the edge, to keep you from falling into sin? What guardrails do you have in place to protect you? Parents, what conversations are you having with your students, teenagers and preteens? What conversations are you having with your children, helping them establish guardrails for their sexuality? Students, listen to your parents on this one. They know more about this subject than you do. It may freak you out to think about it, but it's true. Single adults, what guardrails do you have in place? What are your strategies for protecting yourself to keep you from falling? Are there some clubs, some parties that you refuse to walk into because you know it's a place of darkness? Nothing good happens there. I stay away, just as a rule. Or do you have a rule about how many drinks you'll have when you do go to a club? Or do you have a rule about only drinking a drink you pour yourself or you see someone else pour in front of you? You say, are you encouraging people to drink? Absolutely not. My encouragement is, and hear this well, my encouragement is stay away from parties and clubs where you have to have drinking rules to protect yourself. Nothing good can happen in those kind of environments. Stay away. Situational prevention. Married couples, do you have some mutually agreed upon guardrails that you've put in place to protect your relationship with your spouse? I emphasize mutually agreed upon. Because one of my first guardrails is that I'm not going to do anything or put myself in a situation that makes Heather uncomfortable. I don't get to decide what my guardrails are all by myself. I'm in a partnership with her. We decide on our guardrails together, and I'm not going to do anything that makes her uncomfortable. Over 20 years ago, before we got married, I remember reading an article in Sports Illustrated about David Robinson, who back at the time was one of the best players in the NBA. And this article was a profile of Robinson that described how he was able to maintain his integrity while on the road during a long NBA season. He was a married man, he was a committed Christian, and he worked really hard and was strategic about maintaining his integrity in all kinds of areas when he was traveling away from his wife. And I remember, I've never forgotten this quote. It's had a huge impact on how I think about this. Robinson said in the article, and he was talking about situations where women might come up and flirt with him while he's on the road. He said, I made a rule when I got married. I decided that if anyone's feelings are going to be hurt, they're not going to be my wife's. If I think someone is acting inappropriately, I say so. It may sound harsh, but that's the way it is. My wife is not going to be the one to suffer. And that's a big reason why one of my guardrails is I'm not going to put myself in a situation that makes Heather uncomfortable, nor will she with me. Is it because we don't trust each other? No. It's because we have seen so many of our friends. Friends we grew up with, went to school with, went to college with, friends we've gone to church with, church leaders who were either naive about this or were arrogant enough to believe that they were too spiritual, too enlightened, too progressive to fall. But they did. And the numbers are mounting. So what are your guardrails? What principles and rules do you have in place to protect yourself from falling? And sometimes, despite our best efforts and our best intentions, we still find ourselves in situations where we are one action, one decision, one invitation accepted away from utter disaster. Through no fault of our own, we're just circumstantial. And there's a story about a young man who found himself in just such a situation in the book of Genesis. His name is Joseph, and you either know him from the Bible or from Broadway. He's the favored son of a father who has 11 other sons, and one day his brothers get tired of his father playing favorites, and so they capture Joseph and sell him into slavery, and he winds up in Egypt working as a slave in the household of an Egyptian official named Potiphar. And the Lord is with Joseph in Egypt. And he flourishes, and because he flourishes, Potiphar flourishes. And soon Joseph is in charge of everything in Potiphar's household. We pick up the story in Genesis 39, beginning in verse 6. Now, Joseph was well-built and handsome. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." But he refused. He said, "With me in charge, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. Situational prevention. But one day he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the house servants was inside. She caught him by his cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. I have to believe that the Apostle Paul is thinking about this story when he writes in one of his letters, 1 Corinthians 6, "Flee from sexual immorality." What do? You flee. You don't flirt. You flee. Run away from it. Get out of there. Remember Joseph. Flee. That's what he does in this story. He does what the father wants his son to do in Proverbs. Stay away. Run if you have to. He does the right thing for the right reason, and he maintains his integrity. And you would expect him to be rewarded because he did the right thing. But that's not what happens. Instead, Potiphar's wife accuses him of attempting to sexually assault her, and Potiphar has him thrown into prison. Sometimes, doing the right thing for the right reason comes at a huge price. Fleeing sexual immorality can cost you relationships. Your boyfriend or your girlfriend may break up with you. Your friends may make fun of you. It may cost you a job or a career opportunity because you refuse to remain silent or you refuse to overlook your boss's behavior. Sometimes doing the right thing for the right reason can cause us suffering in the short term. But those who listen to God's wisdom are always playing the long game. Because the Lord is with Joseph in prison. And soon he's in charge of the place. And then eventually he's in charge of all of Egypt. He's rewarded for his integrity eventually, but it takes a long, long time. Jesus says about his ministry, "Wisdom is proved right by her actions or by her children." In other words, just watch wisdom in action and see what kind of fruit it bears. And sometimes we have to wait a long time to reap the fruit from our wise actions that we've been promised. That's why the faithful have to have wisdom. And that's why the wise have to have faith. Because sometimes we have to wait and we have to trust that eventually, maybe not even until the very end, God's wisdom wins. And sometimes, despite our best efforts and our best of intentions, despite repeated warnings from our parents and others who care for us, despite attending church for years and listening to sermons about situational prevention and singing songs and praying prayers, and despite multiple declarations and pledges and promises that I will be different, it's not going to happen to me, sometimes we still cross the line and scoop hot coals into our laps. And there's a story about a young man in the New Testament who did this very thing and fell into all kinds of sin, foolishly fell into all kinds of sin, including sexual sin. First, he insulted his father, and then he ran off to the far country and spent his father's money on wild living, He made one foolish decision after another. He was foolish with his life, his money, his body. And when he had lost everything, when he had wasted it all and he hits rock bottom, he comes to his senses and thinks, I'll go home. Not knowing how his father will treat him. We pick up the story in Luke 15, verse 20. And so this broken young man got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And so they began to celebrate. Jesus tells this story as a way of explaining and defending his ministry to his religious critics who want to know, why are you spending so much time around sinners? People who have shipwrecked their lives with their foolish choices. Why are you inviting them to your table? Why are you eating with them? Why are you forgiving them? Why are you showing them a better way to live, a wiser way to live? Why are you wasting your time on sinners? And Jesus says, because I have come to seek and save the lost. The voice of wisdom in Proverbs says, don't go down that path. It will ruin your life. But in the Gospels, the voice of Christ, God's living wisdom, says to those who have foolishly gone down the wrong path, it's not too late. You can still come home. Because God's wisdom is always playing the long game, even when we make foolish choices and fall into all kinds of sin. So this morning I pray that we all can hear and listen to the voice of wisdom. It's a voice that says, don't go down that path. Stay away from the path of folly. It's a voice that encourages us to practice situational prevention, but it's also a voice that says, come home when we take the wrong path and get lost. So may we hear the voice of wisdom in the voice of Christ. May we see the face of wisdom in the face of Christ, who not only shows us a better, a wiser way to live, but he also reveals to us a God who loves us more than we love ourselves, and whose grace and mercy is big enough to cover our foolishness, our sins, so that we can come home and start over. Let's stand and sing.